You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Peter Alessandria. Peter, thanks so much for being with me today.
Hey, Brainerd. Thanks for having me.
So, Peter, let's talk about your photography and what you're doing. But since I know a little bit about what you've done in the last week or the last day, which is kind of finding these incredible spots, specific spots to shoot, can you tell us a little bit about what you did, let's say, yesterday?
Sure. So, yeah, well, first of all, thanks for having me on the show. I really appreciate it. I admire your work, and I know a lot of people benefit from it. And we were actually supposed to speak yesterday, and I let you know that I was en route to a location to do some shooting last night. One of the things I do, my main passion and kind of the thrust of my photography these days is my fine art photography. I'm located in the New York City area, and I do a lot of photography of the New York City skyline, but I'm always looking for different and unique and interesting and compelling compositions and opportunities and all that. So I do a lot with the moon, and I can talk more about that later, but also do things like the sun. And yesterday we had a pretty interesting event where from a precise location in Brooklyn, the setting sun aligned perfectly with the Statue of Liberty. And so we're dubbing this. For some of your listeners, they're probably familiar with Stonehenge. Apparently, at certain times of the year, the sun aligns with the stone columns of Stonehenge. New Yorkers have taken it upon themselves to dub Manhattanhenge, which is where the setting sun aligns with 42nd Street. We're calling this Statuehenge, and that's where the setting sun aligns perfectly with the Statue of Liberty. So took a lot of planning, a two-hour drive from New Jersey to get to Brooklyn, basically during rush hour yesterday, to get all set up and to get those shots. And you've seen them today. They'll be on my website shortly. They're on my Instagram page, which, by the way, if you want to follow me on Instagram, it's my name, Peter Alessandria, and same on Facebook.
So this is, you know, I mean finding these kind of events, these henge events is also about planning and knowing you have to be in the just the right spot. I would think there's a good amount of research that goes into before you even drive down there, because you have to know the spot you're looking for and the angle that you want, and you only have a very brief time to get that.
Yeah, well, the event itself only lasts a couple of minutes, and that's true of the sun setting or the sun rising in relation to these landmarks. Same with the moon rising or the moon setting. So, yeah, there's a lot of advanced planning. I mean, I spent most of the morning this morning checking out, since we have a full moon coming up this weekend, I've been checking out opportunities and locations and all that. I do as much as I can. Now, there are certain tools that are available, apps and whatnot, and websites that help with that. But once I find where the moon is either coming up or setting or the sun is coming up or setting, you know, I have to work backwards from there, and I have to find locations on the ground that will give me access. And in a place like New York, you know, real estate is at a premium. It's often difficult to find unobstructed views because of the buildings, the power lines. There are a lot of security areas now in and around the city. So, yeah, it's like a jigsaw puzzle. You know, I know the end result. You know, it's like you can see the picture on the box when you buy it, and then when you open it, you got to put all those pieces together to make it work.
Right. And so this is what you've been doing for several years now, right? I mean, I know you do different kinds of photography, but this particular body of work is more based in movements of sun, moon, and natural phenomena. Is that correct?
I guess you can say that. Yeah, I mean, it's really been about the work that you see now on my fine art photography website, which is Peter Alessandria Photography. Most of that work has been created in the last 4 or 5 years, and most of that, I mean, a lot of it, some of it is traditional landscapes, and then a lot of it is cityscapes. I mean, I just take advantage of the fact that I live so close to New York. I love architecture. I love the metropolitan vibe. I think you live in Manhattan, so, you know, there's a lot of people who really appreciate what New York has to offer. And then combining it with the nighttime photography or you know, meteorological events. Again, we were supposed to actually speak last week, and then, you know, Manhattan Henge was happening, and then and when that was a bust because of the clouds, we had this very interesting weather system that moved in, which was this very odd-looking, this huge anvil-shaped cloud that didn't bring a lot of rain, but it brought a ton of heat lightning. So I got all these amazing, and it was at sunset, so the cloud was illuminated by the sun, and I got all this great heat lightning through the clouds above the Empire State Building and the rest of the city, so it was pretty incredible. So we have a unique, you know, not everybody can just hop in their car and 45 minutes later be right outside Manhattan with all these great opportunities to shoot. So, you know, I really, and it's just something I enjoy. I mean, it's my passion. It looks like I'm going to be getting up at about 3:30 in the morning to be up for Moonset, which is happening at 5, I think it's 5:20 or something like that tomorrow. So I have to drive down to Manhattan in the middle of the night and get all set up to get that shot as well. And that's, you know, my prior career, which I may have a chance to speak about, you know, I wasn't getting up at 3 a.m. to do anything. You know, it was more a job, whereas this is really my passion.
Yeah, and I want to talk about that transition to your job and from your job. But before we do that, I know also that you're functioning in a number of ways. You've won a lot of awards. You've exhibited all over the place. But there's also you're also working with news media. Is that correct? Like, for example, yesterday you made those shots, and then how did you distribute those? How did those get out into the world?
Well, you know, that. So I was saying a minute ago, I got home. I was also doing some scouting of locations to shoot the moon this weekend, and then once I got home, it was about midnight, and then my work really began because I have to edit all my photos, and then I submit them, I send them out. And I've developed, really through just cold calling and not taking rejection personally and just being persistent, I've developed relationships in particular, the photo editors at the New York Post. And so I've gotten to know them, and they've gotten to know me pretty well. And so they will routinely accept submissions from me or ask me, you know, did you get anything last night at the storm, you know, that kind of thing. And they've published four of my photos, which is great because whatever you think of the Post and its content in general, they do have 500,000 readers every day. And so it's great exposure for me. I do get paid for that, which is great. And, you know, it's basically one-time editorial use, and I will often then get emails or phone calls from people who want to purchase prints, you know, that kind of thing. There are other newspapers in the U.S. that I have not as close a relationship in terms of the photo editors, but I do routinely send them images as well. And then for Europe and Asia, I do deal with a news agency which syndicates my photos. And so, for instance, last November, we had a supermoon event, some people may remember, and I got a photo of the supermoon coming up over the Statue of Liberty, and it was just a really beautiful photo. And that agency was able to get that photo published in, I think it was 8 international newspapers, it was on TV, it was published in Australia, it was published in the UK and in Asia. I mean, literally millions of people saw that photo. And obviously, I noticed a real uptick in my Instagram followers and on my website and all that. And I also got paid, you know, for all that publication. So that's kind of an ancillary, you know, we talked a little bit yesterday about licensing, and this is one aspect. You know, licensing my work for editorial, it's great because it's kind of a residual or passive payment that I get, you know, every time the photos run and every time it's used out there.
Now, to talk a little bit about, because that's obviously something that you've developed an ability at, you're very good at that, you have a commercial engagement with photography and the art world, this didn't just happen overnight. In fact, you have an unusual perspective. You were a lawyer previously, and then you decided in 2008, I mean, it sounds like for a number of reasons, to be a full-time photographer and figure out how to make it work financially.
Definitely been a lot of figuring out. I'm still working on all that. But, yes, so my first career, I went to college in upstate New York for business and economics, and then I went to law school in upstate New York as well. I got my law degree. I also got an MBA. And what I did was I moved to Los Angeles and worked in the film and TV business. I became an entertainment attorney. And that was my first real exposure to the creative industries, you know, to any kind of visual arts or visual media. I didn't really have any knowledge or interest in that prior. And I mean, it really just came out of the fact, number one, I wanted to get out of the Northeast. Number two, I really loved the idea of, well, living in Los Angeles. And then I thought, if I had to be a lawyer, what would be the most fun and interesting? And I thought, well, let me try entertainment law. And what happened was I worked for a big law firm, and then I went in-house with some film and TV production companies who were actually making productions. Now, they were small little independent companies. They were not, you know, wasn't the big studios or anything like that. But they were making movies, and they were making TV shows. And one of the benefits I got being the corporate attorney was I got to go on the sets of where those projects were being shot. And I got to see the process. You know, I got to see how they made movies. And that was really a revelation to me. I didn't really know anything about that. And that kind of got me going, you know, got my creative juices flowing, if you will. And shortly thereafter, even though I was still working as an attorney, I became an amateur filmmaker. And this was right at the time that digital video was coming in, too. So you could almost literally, before that it was all film, and, you know, film is a very cumbersome process. But with a digital video camera, you know, you could make a movie on your laptop. And a lot of people have done that since. So I began, you know, working with actors and writing scripts and learning about camera angles and, in particular, learning about lighting. You know, lighting is so important for motion pictures and for still photography. And so
what year was that? And also, when you say amateur filmmaking, what was the first project you got involved in terms of filmmaking?
Well, you know, they were just goofy little 5-minute short films. Actually, my longest film was about 45 minutes. But they were just comedies. They were just situational, I guess you call them a situation comedy. One is, you know, a guy gets a, this is before we had unlimited calling on our cell phones, he gets a $3,000 phone bill from his cell phone provider, and he can't get through. He's calling customer service. And so for 45 minutes he's on hold, it's on YouTube, actually. It's called The Phone Bill. For the 45 minutes that he's on hold, he gets progressively more and more anxious and crazy and does all this silly stuff. And then he finally gets through to the customer service rep, and they have this whole thing where she ends up hanging up on him. And, you know, just goofy little comedy things that they didn't really go anywhere, but it was the process. See, that took planning. I had to cast it, I had to write the script. So I thought, okay, what's a compelling storyline? And a lot of people feel, forgive the use of this word, you know, feel victimized by the cell phone companies or insurance companies or whatever. I said, that's something everybody can relate to. And what's a situation where we could play that out? So then I had to find somebody to act in it. Then I had to find a location. You know, there's an
Alaska. This was one of your first sort of creative projects. You're still a lawyer while you're doing this, and correct? And this is your first foray into kind of the arts for yourself. Is that correct?
Correct, yeah, that's it.
So great. So then you're making these films, and that led you into an understanding of lighting, and
right. And then
imagine that contributed to photography. And then then at some point there was a break with being a lawyer, right?
Well, you know, by that time I had started working for myself, and this was early 2000s. I had my own thing going. I was doing more what you would call intellectual property, mostly copyright and trademark work for a big company. And so and I was working for myself. They were based in Texas. I was in California. And it was a really good gig. I was an independent contractor, but I handled all their intellectual property work. They were also licensing properties and whatnot from Hollywood companies they were in the gaming industry. So they were doing gaming machines and stuff like that. So it afforded me a lot of free time. It was very lucrative. They were great to work with. And in my free time, you know, I went from being a filmmaker to picking up the still photography and really learning how to do photography.
And where did that lead? Like, what happened next with the photography that made you think this is really what you want to do?
You know, Brainard, I can't explain it other than it just became my passion. I mean, I might even say obsession. You know, I was just always either taking pictures or thinking about taking pictures, or This was also, so this was the rise of digital SLRs. So that's an interchangeable lens camera, just like the old SLRs, except that you had a digital chip in it. And that meant you got instant feedback. You could see instantly if I change this setting on the camera or if I move the light over here. You know, it was very immediate, and so it was an opportunity to learn pretty quickly, you know, the fundamentals of photography. And the other thing that was happening around the same time was the rise of the internet forums. So there were a number of photography forums on the internet where you could go and post a question. And literally within 20 minutes, you'd have five different answers. You'd be able to see other people's work. There was a lot of discussion of equipment, lenses, lighting, you know, camera bodies, you know, all that stuff. So the information, you know, which is true of a lot of different areas of our life now, the information was much more free-flowing. You know, you could say we were group sourcing or, you know, crowdsourcing the education of, and this is true for filmmaking as well, you know, with digital technologies there. So I was kind of educating myself, and I was learning by doing. And I got pretty good. One of the first things I started doing was portraits and headshots for models and actors. And, you know, living in Los Angeles, there's no shortage of those people, and they all need photos. And, you know, I was offering to do a trade, and it was basically my opportunity to learn, you know, how to do lighting and how to do portraits and all that. And then the other thing I started doing around that time...
What do you mean a trade? By a trade, what do you mean? That you were giving away that service or a trade for what?
They were, instead of me paying them or them paying me, we both got together for a mutual benefit to work on our portfolios. So it was.
So you got them their headshots and they got you a portfolio in a sense.
Yeah, exactly. Great. I actually still have some of those photos on my... So let me just very briefly talk about my current business because it kind of leads from all this. So I still do portraits and headshots. That business is superstarheadshots.com. Superstar Headshots is all one word. Here on the East Coast, it's mostly executive portraits and headshots, and I do, as I told you yesterday, I do photograph a lot of attorneys. And my tagline for that business is I used to be a lawyer, now I shoot them. And as I said, sometimes they laugh, sometimes they don't. And I also still do some actor, you know, musician, model portfolios, stuff like that as well. The second area that I make money from my photography is the commercial product photography, and I was just going to talk about that. That website is greatproductshots.com, and I have photographed everything from computers to cosmetics to clothing, whatever you can think of, really, at this point, food. In that, I also do some architectural photography as well. And that, around the same time that I started doing the portraits and headshots, while I was still an attorney, I started doing some product photography. And I was just kind of drawn to that. I knew it was something that was very, there's a lot of technique, especially lighting and all that, for good product photography. It was just interesting to me. And what I would do is I would go, I probably shouldn't tell you this, but I would go to places like Kmart or Target, and I would buy jewelry, you know, costume jewelry or whatever. I would buy, you know, home consumer goods, whatever I can think of that was challenging. And it's usually stuff that has a very reflective surface. So like a chrome toaster or a piece of jewelry, you know, whatever has a lot of reflective properties, it's very difficult to photograph that properly. And I would go there, I would buy all this stuff, and I would take all these pictures, and then I would go return it, and I was done with it. But that's how I learned product photography, again, by doing, you know. And for something like jewelry, what a lot of people don't know is you don't light the surface of the jewelry. You light the surface that reflects in the surface of the jewelry. Anyway, I can go on and on about that. But so I was learning product photography at the same time. So it was headshots and portraits and then product photography. And what happened in 2008, the end of 2008, we had the global financial crisis. And within a matter of months, my law business was gone. You know, I had this one big client. We actually had a 12-year relationship. It was, like I said, it was a very lucrative, very rewarding relationship, I hope, on both ends. But with the global financial crisis, their business crashed, and they restructured the company, and all the people that I had been working with were let go, and they let go of all their outside contractors. So within a matter of months, I went from a nice six-figure income to basically nothing. Now, the good news is I had saved some money. I paid off all my debt. I wasn't married. I don't have kids. and I'm not married and don't have kids. And I just got to this point where I was thinking, you know, well, let me, I tried to resurrect my law business. I looked for new clients and all that, but the climate, the economic climate was just terrible. You know, you may remember 2009 was a disaster. So I kind of pretty soon came to grips with that's probably not going to happen. And then again, as I said yesterday, I'd read too many books like, you know, Do What You Love, The Money Will Follow. And I just began thinking, you know, what am I going to do for the next 30 years? I mean, really, what do I want to do with the rest of my life, you know? And I kept coming back to photography. And so I had reached a point in my life, I felt like I had reached a point where my life was at a crossroads and I had to decide how to make some decisions, you know, and...
Well, and as you're saying, sorry to interrupt, but that's a, you know, something that other people were thinking at that same time, right? 2009, we're talking about, a year after the crash, I heard more than once people kind of asking themselves that exact question, like, what is it that I want to do? Did I do the right thing? And asking the very big question in life at different points in people's careers, which was really a function, in part of that financial crisis, as you're saying, and common is what I'm saying.
Yeah, I've heard that from many people. You know, I share my story now. I speak, I do public speaking and all that, and I've heard many, many people talk about that. Mm. You know, it was a turning point for a lot of people. And not always good. You know, some people really suffered. There were a lot of people who lost money in the stock market. I mean, it was a very challenging time for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. Now, I have to say this. So I made a decision. This is what I'm going to do with the rest of my life. And also decided at that time I was going to move back east to be closer to the family. My three sisters started having kids. I now have 8 nieces and nephews. And as I said, I don't have any kids of my own. My parents are getting a little bit older. So I made the decision to come back east as well. So I really kind of uprooted my life. Now, looking back, I will say this, you know, having passion, having desire, having, you know, bliss around something is not really a sufficient business plan. And I had to kind of learn the hard way. I thought I was just going to become a great photographer and everything was just going to work out. And for better or for worse, my experience, and other people may have a different experience, but my experience is that that's only half the equation. Especially for something like photography, you know, there's a lot of, I mean, I'm pretty big on Instagram, following other people, and there's, you know, 3 or 4 dozen photographers that work in the New York City area that do just fabulous work. I mean, there's a lot of great photography out there. So I found out pretty quickly it's not enough just to be a good photographer. That's kind of a given. But for me, at least, if I want to make this a business, I have to treat it like a business. And one of the essential functions of any business is sales and marketing. And I resisted that. You know, I just wanted to practice my craft. I just wanted to take pictures, you know. And I'll just, the short, very short story is, you know, between then and now, you know, I spend a lot more time marketing than I do actually taking pictures. And I've learned that this is just the way it is, you know, if I want to earn a living at this. So I do everything from cold calling. I do email news blasts. I try to leverage as much as I can social media. I do networking events. I do public speaking. Whatever I can think of now to get myself out there. And and that's made the difference. You know, that's gone from making this, you know, kind of a glorified hobby to an actual
business. And that took 8 or 9 years, really, right? I mean, that was in the span of the last 7 years or so, right? So.
Say this, you know, as I mentioned earlier, I had some money in the bank, and that turned out to be kind of a curse. So I wasn't as motivated to take action. So I would say it's only really been the last 4.5 years, maybe a little bit, maybe 6 years, and where I've really gotten on this horse where, you know, I got to be marketing. I'm a salesman. I'm a salesman first and a photographer second. Now, some people find that pretty abhorrent, you know, especially the pure artistic types, and that's good if that works for them. For me, I really have to embrace that and own that. And I have to say, I mean, I'm looking at right now a 5-figure deal for licensing some of my photos and a potential 6-figure deal for some more of my photos. And that's only come because of things like cold calling and following up and, you know, doing all the stuff that a salesman would do to generate leads and prospect and close sales.
Right. Well, and how does that feel now? I mean, that's so well put. So here you are. You know, this is what your career has shifted completely, and now you're involved in a number of spheres of photography and art world, and zooming all over the place, getting shots at the perfect day and time and place. How does that? You feel like you've arrived? Is this what you wanted, or is there something lacking in the picture, or something else you'd like to do?
Well, I have a much bigger plan. So we talked yesterday about a particular fine art photographer who has a pretty high status now in terms of sales and stature, at least on the commercial side of photography. So I have ambitions for that. I mean, I would like to have a series of signature galleries in either resort locations or major cities around the world. Looking at all kinds of licensing opportunities. I want to be... I want to be the number one fine art photography guy in the world. You know, so I have much bigger plans, but I can see that this is a progression. So I've won 52 awards for my photography in the last fine art photography in the last 4.5 years. The thing I like to share now with people is that for every one of those awards, there have probably been 2 or 3 or maybe 5 or 10. Failures, rejections, and disappointments. And I realize now that what defines my career is not how I handle the success, but how I handle those failures, rejections, and disappointments. Because in the past, that stuff would have really derailed me. And I have to be honest, there are still some days, as recently as last week, where the disappointments really do get to me. So
how do you handle those failures and disappointments and rejections that you did?
I've had to learn the hard way, and now it's getting a little easier, that what's most important is my being my own. This is going to sound so corny and so trite, and yet this is my truth, you know. So as they say, and you know, take what you like and leave the rest. I can see my progress has been a result of moving from being my own worst enemy to my own best friend. You know, moving to a place of really, instead of beating myself up when things don't work out, is really becoming an advocate, becoming a cheerleader, you know, forgiving myself for being imperfect, you know. And again, it may sound silly, but that seems to be the gist of it, you know, because I have a long history of a lot of self-criticism, being really hard on myself, judging myself, you know, and that really inhibited my ability to put my work out there when I first started. You know, I couldn't even enter a show, much less conceive of winning 52 awards. I was so filled with self-judgment, you know, and... So it's been that process of transforming all of that and not beating myself up when things don't work out. And I do have support systems now. I have somebody who's another photographer. She's on the West Coast. We check in almost every day, talk about our action plan, talk about our goals. You know, we're definitely sounding boards for each other. I actually have a few people like that. So it's been a combination of looking within but also looking without for help. The other thing that I do that has been really helpful is I help others. And I learned a long time ago that if I want to realize or achieve success, and I think this is part of maybe why you do what you do, you know, is to help other people be successful. So I have formed alliances with artists, with other photographers, where, you know, I try to help out with, you know, with their careers, with their projects. Pretty much once a month, although I haven't done it the last few months, but I just did it this past month, I will feature the work of another artist on my blog, and then I'll take that blog and I'll share it on social media, in particular Facebook. And I, you know, between friends and followers, that's about 7,500 people that will be exposed to somebody else's work that may not have gotten that exposure. I've recommended artists for galleries, for gallery shows and stuff like that. I can think of one gallery in particular where I really want to show my work, and all I've gotten from them is rejections, but I do know the owner, and I put a couple of photographers and artists in touch with them, and they've gotten shows there. So it's kind of, you know, helping others, being kind to myself, and then reaching out for help when I can. And then here's my new business plan. So remember, I said I started without a business plan.
Right.
It's a three-sentence business plan. First sentence is, never take anything personally. Now that goes for the, in particular, that's been really helpful with the rejections and the failures and disappointments, not taking that personally. The problem is, in an odd way, if I don't take the failures personally, I also really can't take the successes personally. And as you know, in the art world, it's a very subjective thing. People relate to or experience art. It's a subjective process.
Right.
So in a way, that's very freeing, because if they like my work, that's great, but it's probably more about them than it is about me. And if they don't like my work, that's great, because it's probably more about them than it is about me. But that allows me to do the work that I love for me. And if they get it, great. If they want to buy it, even better. And if not, I don't lose sleep over it anymore. So never take anything personally. The second sentence of my three-sentence business plan is never give up. Now, that may be self-evident, it may not, but what I started doing when I a couple of years ago is I started listening to podcasts just like this with successful photographers and artists and even people in the entertainment business. And more often than not, they would say, the reason I'm successful is not because I'm so talented. Obviously, I have some level of talent, otherwise I wouldn't be sitting here. But the reason I'm successful is I never gave up. And that's kind of, and I heard more than one person say that, and that kind of stuck with me. And I really get that there's no guarantee of success, but there is one guarantee of failure, and that's if I give up. So it gets really hard sometimes. You know, it really, especially, you know, I tend to work alone a lot, and I'm, as I said, I'm constantly putting myself out there and constantly getting rejected. I mean, if I have to tell the truth about it, I'm rejected way more than I'm accepted. Again, I don't know if that's just because of me and my work or if that's just the way this world works, but that's been my experience. So not giving up means not taking that personally, not letting that stop me, not letting that become an impediment to my moving forward. And then the third sentence of my three-sentence business plan is give the people what they want. Now, you know, this can get a little tricky, but this five-figure deal that I referred to a minute ago is coming to me because I'm willing to say yes to something that is not what I had originally had in mind for my photography. I really want to become a high-end luxury brand. Here's the other thing I've been doing a lot is thinking in terms of a brand. So I see myself and my art as a brand. And so I really want to be a high-end luxury brand in those destinations, those distribution channels, you know, that level of awareness and all that. And the opportunity that's coming to me right now is not does not meet with that. But they're willing to pay a nice chunk of cash for, you know, a relatively small number of my photos. So.
Right.
This is what the people want, and I can see how this actually may work to my I have to adjust my thinking about what's the plan, what's the vision and all that with the practical considerations. So, you know, so that's how that's playing out.
So before we go, it's great to hear this whole process and what you're doing. There'll be text about you and links to your Instagram and other places in this interview so people can follow you and keep in touch with what's happening. It's really great and I think inspiring to a lot of people and just very interesting to hear about your particular path, which has succeeded, as you're saying, in your terms, and is a part of the way towards the ultimate goal or grander plan of your business plan, as you were saying. What books are you reading now? That's the last question I always ask, if you don't mind me asking.
I'm looking right now. I have three books on my coffee table here. The first one is an Ansel Adams book. Ansel Adams is probably one of the best-known fine art photographers or landscape photographers of our time. Yosemite and the Range of Light, very inspiring. You know, and this guy was doing stuff, God, 50 years ago. And he, by the way, he was working with cameras that were, you know, weighed 50 pounds, and he had to drag them up the mountainside of the Sierras and all this crazy stuff to get these photos. So that's one thing. I'm reviewing a book, that I read a long time ago called Light, Science, and Magic. It's more of a technical book for anybody who is aspiring photographer, who is interested, especially in product photography. This talks all about the properties of light and how to maximize that and utilize that for your photography. I don't know if you know the Greek derivation of the word photography is to paint with light. So light is very important. And then I have another book called Creating Money, Attracting Abundance. I'm not going to say anything about that book, but if it strikes a chord with you, go look it up. It's on Amazon.
Well, thanks so much. I really appreciate you talking with me today, and wish you the best in your adventures and work.
Thanks, Brainard. It's been a real pleasure. Thank you so much.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.